Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C. until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
New from U.S. author Mike Palachuk, Camp America. Here's what American poet David Ray has to say. Mike Palachuk reminds me of Socrates, the gadfly who asked unwelcome questions, Diogenes with his lantern looking in vain for an honest man, Chekhov, the man with the hammer challenging the complacent family to share their meal, Kerouac, the ever-on-the-move, somewhat hysterical searcher, and he also reminds me of many Americans who as children were so blasted with propaganda that they're devoting the rest of their lives to challenging the lies and all who tell them. In this land where babies are brought by storks and buildings collapse due to unpatriotic bricks, we need the gadfly. Because no leader, preacher, guru, or saint will wake us up, though the doomsday clock is ticking close to 12. David Ray, American poet, author of The Endless Search and The Death of Sardanapalus and other poems of the Iraq Wars. To order Camp America and all of Mike Palachuk's books, go to the New American Dream website, www.newamericandream.info. Howard Zinn writes, Mike Palachuk writes with passion, wit, and always with a strong social conscience. Camp America, from author Mike Palachuk. The website again, newamericandream.info.
It's just a ride. And we can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defense each year and instead spend it feeding, clothing, and educating the poor of the world, which it would many times over, not one human being excluded, and we can explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
And now, coming to you live from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, in Duluth, Minnesota, Dreaming the New American Dream, with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachuk, brought to you by the Rock Creek Free Press.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the New American Dream radio show. It's been another busy week in Fort Lauderdale. The weeks all seem very busy lately. That's a good thing, but it can be tiring. It's been an interesting time, too. Supposedly there's an old Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. I think I must have been targeted on that somewhere along the line. But the thing is, I like interesting times. I wouldn't want to live in any other kind. So, well, thanks, whoever that was that cursed me this way, you know. Appreciate it. You know, that whole concept of things being interesting is a problem I have with the mainstream traditional concept of a Christian heaven. You know, the idea of not doing anything, just sitting around, being happy all the time, and mainly just not doing anything. That, I don't know, that doesn't sound like heaven to me. I have a little different idea, but I hope not to be checking that out anytime soon. But I have some ideas for this place we live in. And that's why Mike and I are doing this show, because we have a new American dream. My mom came home from the hospital. For those of you who hadn't heard, she broke her pelvis back in June. And at age 96, she's recovered and home. And it's just incredible, the recuperative powers that she has. I'm just so lucky to have her around. Mike's new book, Johnny Moon, should be available this week. It is really a good book. It's a novel, and it talks about a kid in Catholic school in the time of John F. Kennedy, and some pretty fantastic experiences that he has. I hope you'll be looking for it. There's ordering information will be on the New American Dream website. I'll be sure to put a order form on the show.newamericandream.info. Well, that's about all I have prepared to say right now. So I'm going to turn the show over now to the author of that book, my friend and co-host, Mike Palachuk, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. How you doing? Here from the sweltering heat of Duluth today. It's actually in the 80s today, which is pretty nice. Today we want to welcome back Phil Hay. He's from Sioux City, and Eileen Fleming is filling in for Mickey Z. Mickey has he's got to work somewhere in a gym in New York City tonight, so he couldn't be here. But Eileen is going to be a great guest. She says she describes herself as being from the green swamp of Central Florida. I'm not really sure where that is, but I'm sure she'll tell us. So tonight we're coming to you from Vancouver, Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Sioux City, and Central Florida. And if you've noticed, it's the drumbeat of the 10th anniversary of the remembrances of 9/11 are taking place, and it's just also interesting that they're all fake, of course. Barack Obama lied. Now, I'll never forget where I was that night. I was working overnight at the group home that I work at. I work in a wake overnight. I have to punch a time clock every hour to show I'm not snoozing. But I remember looking face to face into Barack Obama's eyes, and he was lying. And that I'll never forget that. He'll never be much to me. Paul Wellstone's spirit and the others who went down in the plane crash in a forest not far from here. JFK, RFK, Martin Luther King. That was, to me, that's what was actually America. What we're living in now is something other. The poor, ending war, social justice. Many today would say social justice is just a waste of time. I visited with someone not too long ago who said that the poor were poor because they just weren't smart enough, and it's just too bad about that. And he calls himself a Christian, and that's very, very confusing to me. But remember to check out the Nuclear Resistor at nukeresistor.org. There you'll find news about Americans fighting against the United States military machine, Americans in prison for fighting against Barack Obama, George Bush, Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, Colin Powell, the whole gang. Remember, freedom is not free. If you are enjoying your freedom today, please thank a protester. And remember, October 6th, remember. If you go to October Coalition or October6th.org, you'll find a website for the group that's gathering in Washington, D.C. that day. And they say they're not going to be leaving until troops leave Afghanistan. There is a pledge that you can take and sign up for. There's also a group that's going September 10th, and they say they're not going to leave either until things change. And that's sponsored by Citizens for Legitimate Government. So I have high hope for what's going to happen this fall. And always remember, the Americans in the United States military fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan and Libya are not fighting for our freedom. They are fighting to secure profits for corporations, power for rich men and women. They're fighting for empire, moving people across the globe. The real fighters for freedom are those who are opposing the U.S. military. And remember, the American military members stationed in some 700 bases around the globe are not there to secure freedom. You know, when the Soviet Union folded, those troops did not come home. Those bases were not dismantled because it was all a lie. It had nothing to do with freedom. It had everything to do with power and money. And remember the tax dollars, the millions and billions of tax dollars we pay to the U.S. military, not for freedom. Those dollars are paying for our own oppression and the oppression of millions of people around the world. Those tax dollars should rather go towards health care, schools, roads, sidewalks, housing. Those who return to Iowa and Minnesota and Ohio and California and Florida, the ones who have been fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan, are not heroes. They are invaders, thugs, murderers, and criminals. Any welcome home parade should proceed directly to the county courthouse. And remember, if planes would have really crashed into the Pentagon, we would have seen that footage 1 million times by now. It was the Pentagon has to be the most secured. You know, when you go into Walmart, they watch you if you're touching the Snickers bars for too long. Okay, well, the Pentagon has to be 1 million times that, and we don't see the footage of a plane crashing into the Pentagon because they don't have it. The FBI took all those cameras, and there was no plane. I don't know what there was, but there was no plane. What we do know is that they're lying to us. And Building 7 came down when it was not even hit by a plane. It came down around 5 o'clock that afternoon, and it was obviously a controlled demolition. Shanksville, there was a hole, and they say the plane shrunk into that or sunk into that, and there's no bodies, there's no blood. It just shrank down. It just sunk down into the hole, and that is, of course, a lie, but of course, we say okay, and we believe it, and it's very kind of embarrassing. I'm not sure being stupid is the reason. You know, we're the ones who invented kiwi strawberry shakes. I wouldn't call that stupid. There must be something else. The new American dream is about us becoming the sort of country we always say that we are. That has never been more important than it is today. This is John Updike in his book, The Terrorist, the novel. The great city sprawls with people, some smartly dressed, many of them shabby, a few beautiful, but most not, all reduced by the towering structures around them to the size of insects, but scuttling, hurrying, intent in the milky morning sun upon some plan or scheme or hope, they are hugging to themselves their reason for living another day. Each one of them impaled live upon the pin of consciousness, fixed upon self-advancement and self-preservation, that and that only. And I think that's so telling because I can feel that in myself. You head out the door, yes, you know, you head out on the plan of the day you have, and what you want to do is you want to advance yourself in some way or, you know, make yourself a little more safe. You know, if we, to actually go that extra yard and be in Washington and refuse to leave and actually disrupt your own routine, that's those folks have to be really commended for that. It's time. We are there. Those of us who have spoken have been sent to Siberia with a roll of the eyes from the others at the Thanksgiving table. And here we sit in the basement at the dusty exile's table holding a greasy turkey leg in our greasy hands, getting grease all over our faces. Let us begin. So here we go. Scooch up to the samovar. Maybe leave your hat and boots on. Fill your peasant hands with a warm drink and listen to the sound of hoofbeats on the ice. The forces of evil, the large corporations, the United States military, Barack Obama, desperately want us to be afraid. They need us to be afraid, but we cannot be afraid.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek.
We'd like to thank Rock Creek Free Press for sponsoring our show. And they're a great sponsor for us. And you'll be hearing their ad later on in the show. Duck and Cover. Remember Duck and Cover? Massive public service announcement campaigns around the nation on radio, television, newspapers, in schools everywhere for years and years. And then a real nuclear event happens. And do you hear anything? I can't hear anything. You hear something? What was that? Is that a siren? Oh, no, no. It was. I think it was somebody's cell phone. Or, well, maybe a car alarm. You know, what the fuck? What the fuck? Fukushima? Nothing? No reports? Nothing? What the fuck? Are we breathing anything right now? Eating radiation right now? Anybody know? Anyone? Anyone? Bueller? Bueller? What was that all about then anyway, in the 50s and 60s? And what is this all about anyway? Maybe, just maybe, they were trying to make us afraid of Russia so they could make big money making large nuclear bombs. They made billions and billions of dollars and continue to do so, but that couldn't have anything to do with it, right? I mean, right. This can't really be happening, right? Can it? What the fuck? Maybe they don't want us now to make them want to stop making money on nuclear power and nuclear weapons. Should we stop, drop, and roll? Or something? Anything? Hello? Hello? Is there anybody out there? Hello?
I'd like to welcome our first guest tonight. Phil Hay comes to us from Sioux City. Phil Hay is an English professor. He refused induction to the draft in 1967, and he's still here. He's been writing and teaching at Briarcliff College since 1969, and he is now a professor in the English writing department. Phil, are you there?
I am.
Phil, how is the connection? Can you hear me all right? Or
You could be a little louder.
A little louder. Maybe I don't speak loud enough. What's up with you? Have you got any... you had, how's your health? Are you doing better on that, or?
Yeah, hanging in.
Okay, good. And there was something you had sent out a while back, and I was just kind of curious how that was going. How's your, the writing? Do you have any, new poems or books you can tell us about, or?
I have a few posters, an artist from Rochester, New York, found my work in an anthology and wrote to me and said, I'd like to see one of those poems on a poster. And he's an artist, so he made some art and were printed.
Cool. And where are those? Where are those? Where are those distributed?
Just from me. Anybody who wants to write to me and send a little money, I'll send you posters.
What's your email address, Phil? Do you feel like giving that out?
I can give you my email address. Hey@briarcliff.edu.
Okay, and it's Hey. Okay. Phil, do you have any poems you'd like to read for us tonight? And while you're reading those, if you feel like giving any background or any about what was going on when you wrote those, that'd be great. Just take it away.
I thought about this line. Who made up his mind he was going to resist a draft. the draft lottery favored him, so he didn't have to go through the problems of resisting. And he came to realize that he was a real patriot. And he reminded me of a poem that I wrote a couple of Memorial Days ago, which is called To the Non-Veterans. We gather here today to celebrate the non-veterans, those who stood for something other than war, who didn't believe in inflated political talk, who knew it led to slaughter that couldn't be justified or honestly explained to anyone. To Henry David Thoreau asking Emerson why he was outside the jail cell. To Robert Lowell, who must have known he only had one life to live for his country, in jail or anywhere he could write. To beautiful Muhammad Ali for making it clear that war is people to people, not destroying to save, but rather surely racist at heart. To Steve Smith and friends who brought the war home in the flames of their draft cards. And to so many who cannot be named here or anywhere, imagining another memorial with all their thousands of names, and perhaps a few words, something like this. We chose something besides war, knowing how precious it is to question and oppose the madness, and knowing that if we did not question and oppose, who would those who come after us look to for examples, who witness freedom by living at whatever cost? Or perhaps not those words, nor even their names, but the silence each of us will have to stand in alone, asking ourselves what to do next, what they would have done in our place, and we in theirs.
Thank you, Phil. Do you have another one?
I thought that would be the one I wanted to...
That's very cool. Can you... what's happening with at Briarcliff? Are you back? When do you go back to school?
Coming up.
Coming up soon?
The end of the month. Yeah.
When you said that a while back, you told me you had resisted, and you had refused something, refused to register for the draft, and then did anything happen for that? Was that back in the late 60s? Was it?
No. Oddly enough, nothing happened. Except I became a daddy, and the draft board was very happy to hear that.
So
they let
and that
me
was
out.
Probably... Go ahead.
Hmm?
Go ahead. I stepped on your line.
But also, I was pleased because I told my students that they should resist the draft, and that if anyone thought I was breaking the law, they could turn me in and have me arrested. And nobody turned me in. So
that's very cool.
I was heard.
Were you watching the door, the classroom door, for a couple of years or a couple of semesters at least?
No, you can't teach in fear.
Right.
I just kept going on with whatever I thought I should do. And, you know, if they wanted to interrupt, that was their business, not mine.
What do the kids you teach, what do they think about what's happening? Like, are they aware? I suppose they're aware. Are they concerned? Are they curious about what's going on with the war? Do they support the war in general, or what's the general feeling there? I know you haven't started back yet, but like last year,
I think the students are just asleep about it, mainly because their life keeps going on just like it always would. And I've talked to them about that. You know, I said, in World War II, they had shortages. In Vietnam, during Vietnam, we had protests and drafts. And, you know, nothing's bothering you now. Once in a while, I have a student who has a relative serving, but that's not quite the same thing.
Well, it's good that they have you there with them to at least prod them a little bit, and also the administration and the other faculty, I would imagine.
Yeah, the other faculty is very much with me in it. And we're perturbed that we're in Afghanistan, which is never a good place to be.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Phil, for your good work and your reading your poem for us tonight. And I look forward to talking to you again in a couple of months, if that's all right with you.
Sure enough.
Okay. Thank you, Phil, and have a good night.
Okay. Good night.
Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C. until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
The best of the best, Navy SEALs. They swim underwater wearing camouflage face paint, green and gray. To put in sidewalks in poor neighborhoods? Well, no. To bring health care to poor people? No. To find out the truth about our history? To free prisoners from prison? No and no. Well, then what? What do the best of the best of our country do then? Oh, they kill silently and then swim back. Underwater. They hold their breath for a really long time after killing people with knives or their bare hands. The face paint is not run or smear. Dude. Wow. Navy SEALs, the best of the best our country has to offer. Wow.
9/11, anthrax, Bush, Cheney, Tom Clancy, wars, depression. It's all there in The Hunt for Fred October. Fred October, he's the man in the gray flannel suit, the man who ignored the world in order to build a home in the suburbs, get ahead in his job, and raise his family. And now it's too late. And his children now want to kill him. He let it all happen. He could have stopped it, but he had a pressing business meeting and a golf game. There will be plane crashes, boom, intense computer screen scenes, searching for passwords to Google vital information, tick, 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 tuck, tuck, and train explosions, pow, and car chases and crashes, screech, bam, and a sexy bar scene in low light, ooh la la. He's Fred. Fred October, the man who said, better rich than red, and his kids want him dead. Fred October, the man in the gray flannel suit, coming to movie screens everywhere this fall, in October. Our next special guest is Eileen
Fleming. a citizen of conscience for the U.S. House of Representatives 2012. She's the founder of WeAreWideAwake.org, staff member at SalemNews.com, and a feature correspondent for Arabisto.com and columnist for VeteransToday.com. I think we're having a little trouble getting her online, so please bear with us just one moment. Mike, could you tell us a little bit about how you came across Eileen? Well, can you talk for a minute, Mike, while I find the number?
Sure. Okay. Well, I just want, I'd like to let people know that I'm up here in Duluth, and Chuck is down in Florida, and Len is out in Vancouver, Canada. And I mention that each time before the start of the show, because I just think it's, you know, we're doing this from the grassroots, and we're coming to you from a lot of different places. We've never really gotten together and decided to do this. We just decided over online to give the New American Dream a chance. I really want to say thank you to Chuck and to Lynn and what they have allowed for my part to allow me to do this, to have a chance to write and to reach out to different people. I can tell you one thing that I do that today I sent out the mailing list, and you know, Ruth and I moved to a house in the country it's in Saginaw. Saginaw is the township, actually. It's near Duluth. But anyway, there's not much internet coverage. So when I send out the newsletter now, I have to go to McDonald's and sit in the parking lot there to get it. And then after I sit at one McDonald's for a while, I sat at one for about an hour and a half, and I figured I better move on. So I go to another McDonald's, and I go to the library, and finally I send out this mailing list was to 20,000 plus people. And I got back some of the emails I get back are not the most complimentary, but I guess I've got it coming. You know, if people don't want to receive it, that's okay. But some of them, if you got a newsletter this time, you'll notice that on the very bottom it says to unsubscribe, you have to. You need to give us a line from Cool Hand Luke, and or the Big Lebowski, or the second season of Northern Exposure. And some of the people, even though they're unsubscribing, they're really kind of funny. They kind of play along with it. They say a lot of them pick out the line I was trying to get to. It would be we have a failure. I think we have a failure to communicate. That's the Cool Hand Luke line, and they'll do that, and they'll play along with it and give me that. Or some even went farther into Cool Hand Luke and gave me almost a whole paragraph of stuff. And some will go to Big Lebowski and gave me some of the different scenes.
We're ready to go, Mike.
Okay, here we go.
Okay. Eileen, welcome to the New American Dream radio show. I'm sorry we had a little trouble getting started here, and I'm afraid that you're going to be limited to 10 or 11 minutes instead of the 15 I promised you.
All right, just tell me when to start, and I'll take off.
Well,
does it sound okay for you?
Just take off and run. Let's hear what you have to say.
I have a hard time with you. I say, can you hear me okay? Because I'm having a hard time hearing you.
I can hear you okay, and I'd like you to just go ahead and tell us what you have to say.
Okay. Well, one, should I introduce myself, or has that been done?
You can probably do a better job.
I can't hear you. I'm sorry. Maybe...
Tell us a little about yourself. I understand you're in Central Florida and you're running for office.
U.S. House of Representatives. I started out, I'm a nurse by education. The 9/11 happened. I wanted to learn why some people in the world hated us, could do such a thing. I began researching, and because of my faith, I understand to do good is what I want to do, not bomb, torture, occupy people. I connected with Olive Trees Foundation for Peace, a nonprofit that was raising awareness and funds to help replace some of the 1 million fruit-bearing trees that Israel's wall has destroyed. And we American taxpayers provide over $1.5 million per mile to build that wall. And when I went over and saw it for the first time in 2005, I was writing my first novel based on the memories of a 1948 Palestinian Muslim refugee from the Galilee who made his way to the USA and into a position in top secret clearance in the defense industry during the Cold War. And, oh, that's my cat. I'm so sorry. And 9/11 happened, and he founded the Olive Trees Foundation for Peace. And we took a trip over there in June of 2005, and when I saw that wall and went into the refugee camps and was meeting the people and learning what was not being reported in the news in America and what my government did not want we the people to understand, I just knew I had to do something. But what really clinched the deal for me was meeting Mordecai Vanunu, and who he is the man in 1986 who exposed Israel's seven-story clandestine weapons of mass destruction facility. It's called the Dimona. It's in the Negev Valley, the desert. And he was a mid-level technician there. But let me preface this by saying Vanunu was born in Marrakesh, Morocco in 1954 into an Orthodox Jewish home. The Zionists came to his neighborhood in 1963, convinced his father to abandon the general store. They had a comfortable lifestyle there by Moroccan standards. And they were convinced that they were going to come and have a home in the land of milk and honey. But what happened to the Vanunus is they were banished to the ethnically cleansed Palestinian village of Beersheba. And everybody, all the settlements are illegal under international law. But, of course, the Vanunus had no idea that, you know, that's where what was going on there, because that's not explained to the people who go over there and settle in the occupied territories. And every single settlement is illegal. Well, you know, there was mosques, but Vanunu never said he never met Palestinian as a human person until he was in university. He got very involved with Palestinian human rights. He does his time in the army, as everybody in Israel, male and female, have to serve in the army. And then he saw the waste of it all, the occupation, what it was doing to the Palestinians. And he was turning more and more off of the Israeli point of view, as well as he had already, his parents had gone very Zionist, very fundamentalist, and as his father got more that way, Vanunu turned off, and by the time he was 16, he had become an atheist. And he finished at the university, and he was working still at the Dimona for about 9 years. And because he was a good worker, he was cross-trained in many of the departments. The sign out front said it was a textile plant, and all the workers, nobody knew what they were working. They did not tell those to the workers. They all had to sign a secrecy pact that they wouldn't talk about what they did. And it was all very compartmentalized jobs, little cogs, little bolts they were doing. But Vanunu put it together, and one decided on his own, never discussed this with anybody, to get a camera and film, and he smuggled them in on two different occasions, kept them in his locker. And one night, the supervisor left the keys to the restricted areas in the shower room, and Vanunu picked them up and spent the evening wandering through all these top secret locales, snapping pictures, returns the keys, takes the camera and the film out on different days. And by January of 1986, they are laying off people. And Vanunu said they were going to switch him to another location. And Vanunu said, no, I think you want to get rid of me for political reasons. I quit. They said, good, quit. He quit. He traveled around Europe with undeveloped film for about 10 months. He ends up in Sydney, Australia, wanders in one night to a social justice Anglican church, begins a conversation with Father David Smith. They were both existentialists, and they hit it off. And at this time, Vanunu was, an atheist existentialist. Within a couple of weeks, really, he had decided to share his pictures, the photos, his story with the people at the church, and also to be baptized a Christian. And he told me he really had no clue. And a few days, really, after all of this, his story gets its way. It's kind of complicated, but the short version is Peter Hunnam, an investigative reporter for the London Sunday Times, flies to Sydney, Australia, meets Vanunu. They develop the pictures. Peter and Vanunu fly to London with the pictures. They, the London Sunday Times hired a nuclear physicist, Frank Barnaby, to question Vanunu for 3 days, and he did. He was absolutely convinced Vanunu was acting on ideological grounds. Vanunu said, the people should know what's going on, in underground, and that they should know what their government is doing. And he felt he was acting out, speaking up, because he wanted to prevent a nuclear holocaust. In the interim, a few of the photos had been stolen and given to the Daily Mirror, which is like a tabloid paper. Like we have the Inquirer, it was one of those kind of things. And they published some of the photos, a very bad article about Vanunu. And this is while Vanunu is waiting for the London Sunday Times to publish a well-vetted article. And the interim, Vanunu thinks he met an American beautician on holiday, but she was really a Mossad agent, and the Mossad is like our CIA. And when the London, the story broke in the tabloid, Vanunu panicked, and she said, well, she has a sister in Rome, that he could hide out there until it blows over. And so they take off, they go to Rome. The second he walks in the apartment, he's hit over the head, drugged, bound, and taken back to Israel on a cargo ship. And he wakes up. He says he doesn't remember anything until he wakes up, and they drag him into this interrogation room, and they throw the London Sunday Times newspaper down on the desk and say, "See what you did." And he said he was never so relieved in his life, because he thought that would be the end of the story with the other one. But it wasn't the end of the story. Vanunu had a closed door trial. He was convicted of treason and espionage. He was sentenced to 18 years in, most all in solitary. He was released April 21, 2004, but he was put under these draconian restrictions from the British emergency mandate time. They've told Vanunu, forbade him to speak to foreigners, to have a cell phone, to have an internet connection, to approach an embassy, to approach the airport, blah, blah, blah. Well, he has his own website. It's Vanunu.com. He has his own YouTube channel. He makes his own YouTube videos, and he's Vanunu VMJC. And he is waiting at this time. He's been under 24/7 surveillance. Well, let me back up. I met him in 2005, and I was interested in his childhood and why he, wanted to be a Christian. That was the original story I was interested in. I put it in my first book, which is Keep Hope Alive, based on Dr. Diab's memoirs, but it's also my story, too, my spiritual journey as a child of the 60s. And so that happened in 2005, January 2006. Israel brings charges against Vanunu for all the interviews he gave in 2004 after he was released from 18 years in jail. They told me not to speak to foreigners, which they really meant he was not to speak to foreign media. He is allowed to speak to Israeli media. A foreign media person can give them all the questions, but it has to come from the Israeli media. It's crazy. Anyway, Vanunu gave, 100 interviews, at least 100 interviews, and Amy Goodman's was the main one in America, who anybody would know. And why Vanunu told me, CBS, NBC, ABC, all of the big media affiliates in America wanted to interview him because he was living in East Jerusalem, hanging out a lot at the American Colony, which is the place where the reporters stay when they are in East Jerusalem. So he met many of them. They all wanted to interview them, but because Vanunu was under restrictions, they went ahead and would not interview them because, you know, their editors would say, no, he's under restrictions. We can't put it out there. We'll get in trouble with the Israelis. So all these years, he's right there. They could have interviewed him, but they wouldn't stand up to Israel. Well, somebody kind of had to, and I was, as I said, not a reporter when I met Vanunu. I was writing a novel. January 2006, his freedom of speech trial begins. They brought all these charges against him for his 2004 interviews. This trial goes on until July of 2007, and they convicted Vanunu at that time. We're going to sentence him to 6 more months in jail for 2004 interviews. But back and forth this went, and they decided, okay, in February 2008, they would give him community service. And he said, okay, he'll do it in East Jerusalem. That's been the only neighborhood he has lived since he got out of jail. And East Jerusalem is the Palestinian side. West Jerusalem, there's no wall or fence or anything there. You just walk down the street and you're in the west side, West Jerusalem, which is 99.99% Israelis. But Vanunu's home at that time was East Jerusalem. He wanted to do community service there. Israel said no, he would have to go to West Jerusalem. But in West Jerusalem, his life is in danger. He would be, you know, tormented and, unsafe there. So what they did instead was they put him back in solitary confinement last summer for 78 days. It was a 90-day sentence. They let him out in 78 days, back in solitary. He came out and got on Facebook and, you know, put up YouTube and was really just fighting really, really, really hard. And the situation right now is, in May, he wrote an inspired letter. People can get to it if they can't find Vanunu's YouTube. I've got it posted on many of my articles at wearewideawake.org. And he wrote this wonderful letter to the Israeli ministers about how they just, the Knesset in March passed a law that the court can revoke any Israeli citizenship, any Israeli who's been convicted of treason. Well, the gist of this law, of course, was to go after the what they call Arab Israelis, the Palestinians, the indigenous people who did not flee in 47, 48, or 67, whatever. They stayed there. They got their Israeli citizenship. But, you know, if Israel convicts them of treason, now they can kick them out. So that's what the law was passed to do. But Vanunu, very, very wisely, sees this law because they convicted him of treason. So now he's asking them to honor this law.
We're going to have to we're going to have to cut this short now.
Okay.
But this is a fascinating story. Can you briefly tell people where they can find more details? Just basically tell them where they can find your articles.
Thank you. It's weareWideAwake.org or Google Eileen Fleming, 1M. I'm pretty sure you'll get to me. There's the Vanunu Saga, a link. I've got the Vanunu book, my third book, about his freedom of speech trial. And there's an article the last couple of days, today's August 17th, the Y-1213, Made in USA, Weapons of Mass Destruction, and Mordecai Vanunu. Read that one, and August 13th, 2 Degrees of Kevin Bacon and Message Through the Door of the Colbert Report, the message I got through my book and about Vanunu's request to have his citizenship revoked, the restrictions lifted so he can leave Israel and get go and have his life away from 24/7 surveillance by security. So it's weareWideAwake.org, and the book is Mordecai Vanunu's Freedom of Speech Trial and My Life as a Muckraker. And start there, and it'll lead you on.
Well, thank you for visiting with us on the show tonight, and we'll have to have you back in a month or two to tell us a little more about this. And there were some other there's always something happening.
There's always something, and I'm hoping in another month or two this story will be old, and Vanunu will be free, and the Y-1213 will also be free.
I hope so too.
Thank
I do
you.
Indeed.
All right, thank
Bye.
You.
Thank you, and have Thanks. A good night.
And now get ready to be released for the Christian Christmas holiday movie season, My Big Fat American Auschwitz. Muslims and terrorists and commies, oh my, towelheads and Negroes and homos and liberals and tinfoils and wetbacks, poor people and you people and they people, oh my, eagles and beagles and Edelweiss, sauerkraut and six-packs, My Big Fat American Auschwitz, coming soon.
Are you going to sponsor a foreign exchange student this fall? Right now, it's the time to send them the new book they can then read on the plane. How to Speak American. Your new little beaner or Ruski or Frenchie will learn such useful phrases as, nice day today. Who won the game? What's on tonight? That's good. Pizza. I like pizza. Never heard of that. No, I don't know where that is. You're a wacko. Support the troops. Universal health care is a communist plot. You sound like a conspiracy theorist. Poor people, they deserve what they get. How to Speak Like an American. It's a small book. Read it on the plane. And by the time they land, they'll be just like you. At the end of the day, the bottom line is on the same page. How to Speak American, dumbing down the world one foreigner kid at a time. Get her done.
Well, it's been a long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. It's election season in Washington, D.C., and Ames, Iowa, and Mount Liberty. Mount Liberty and the Congressional District have a new candidate. Joe Coffey might be called a non-traditional candidate, kind of the way they refer to the older folks taking education and sociology classes over at Wayne State College. Joe is, well, what is Joe anyway? He's a family man with problems fitting in. He would have been a hero of Bukowski if Bukowski would have heard of him, but nobody has heard of Joe Coffey. Joe is no Joe America. He's not a flatter you'd find in the front yard smoking a pipe, stopping a lawnmower in the crisp white T-shirt for a moment to chat with the neighbors. Some say if God had wanted us to vote, he would have sent us candidates. Well, maybe he sent one, just the one, to see how we would handle it. Joe used to live in Omaha in a commune they called a resistance community. They fought the Air Force for planning to nuclear bomb the world, and they fought the Catholic Church for not giving a shit about the Air Force preparing to bomb the world and spending all those billions of dollars on the bombs and the planes rather than the poor black neighborhoods of North Omaha. Things went bad in Omaha, and Joe and his wife and kids moved away. Joe thinks his best friend got killed by someone, maybe the FBI, after he and his friend had occupied the Catholic Church, the cathedral, trying to fight the Church and the Air Force. Joe got away and he lived to tell about it, but most days he'd rather have died. They moved to Mount Liberty and tried to live the good life. The peacenik in the gray flannel suit, trying to ignore the world for 10 minutes and enjoy peace and quiet and a well-mowed lawn. It was driving Joe crazy, it seemed. And years later, the Strategic Air Command was still a booming business, and Father Carney was now the bishop. Father Rick, the education bishop, the World Herald had tagged him. The special agent in charge had moved to Minneapolis to manage the FBI's campaign against the release of Leonard Peltier from Lewisburg. The old three-story resistance community on North 18th Street had been annexed by the Creighton University Philosophy Fraternity, and life was good. And Joe lay on the sofa for 14 years thinking about Charles McNulty Calhoun, to die, to be a martyr. Hadn't the nuns raised them to want to be martyrs? They had turned against their own church, their families had said, but they didn't get it. They certainly didn't care if the church said nothing about North Omaha starving while off at Air Force Base. At the South, they had spent billions, billions on weapons that are supposed to kill. Thou shalt not kill. At church the other day, Jane and Joe had become Methodists and compromised to give the kids some kind of church. The girls had recited the Ten Commandments, and Joe was surprised to hear it was now, thou shalt not murder. Very convenient for the warden at Huntsville and the commander at Offutt and the president who bombs Pakistan or Tripoli or anywhere he wants. Now it's thou shalt not murder. Joseph Stephen Coffey thought about killing every day, killing himself. But thou shalt not kill. The nuns said that. Each day that Joe woke up, he asked himself on the way to the bathroom if they were better off with him or without him. But he stayed. He drank coffee with Jane, managed a few jokes, and fashioned a plan to get through the day. Jane stayed, too, and worked her ass off. She smiled and decorated and repaired the old house and made it look great on Christmas and apologized to her family because Joe was too depressed to attend the birthday party or graduation. He's got to work. He's got a paper out, she said as they turned their backs to laugh. She stood tall and firm, not getting angry, not making excuses, not backing down. Joe delivered the Sioux Falls Argus Leader and the Sioux City Journal on one large motor route covering 70 miles around Mount Liberty. He finished before dawn in time to get the kids ready for school and to be home in case the FBI came, which they had not, were not. So now who was he? Who the hell are you, Joe Coffey? They didn't come. They never were coming. And you deliver papers and sleep for 10, 11, 12 years? Your old high school friends are talking about retirement plans. You haven't started yet. To die for the cause, to fight the bloody British and die, and the lads drink a pint in your name and sing your praises many nights because you were the one. You were the one who wouldn't give in, who wouldn't give up, who was funny and proud and strong and tough and had balls of hooking steel, who understood the United States of America and all its non-glory, who hated its holidays, its Thanksgivings and Christmases and New Year's, its Veterans Day, Flag Day, Memorial Day, all its television days and war days. You were the one who knew and who was a rock, and you were dead. What a life. But to live, oh, to exist in July or August or January in Nebraska on a clearest crystal afternoon, and to be sitting at home with sleep in your eyes as your children come home from a busy, happy day, to look out the back door and see the evenly distributed clean snow and to understand that this would not end, that you would not be getting work soon, that you would not be selling hardware or editing the local paper, that you were not eligible for that life, maybe because you were crazy, because you had not died those years ago on a crisp night in Omaha. Anyone who did not die that night does not deserve to live, does not deserve a good life. We could milk cows, she cooed into his ear as if saying, let's make love.
Cow's milk. Everything in Joe's view was white. The curtain, the frost, the snow, the people. He turned around within her grasp, pinned his chin to his chest to look her in the eyes, and wrapped his arms around her waist. She smiled and grabbed his wrist with a circle of her right hand. Joe could read her mind through those hopeful eyes. He'd make a wonderful dairyman. If he got out there in the cold, started to learn the personalities of the cars, and they'd have NPR on instead of Paul Harvey. He'd love it, but he'd have to quit the paper route. I'm going to run for Congress, he said. Jane scowled as if trying to hear better. She dropped her arms and stepped back, forcing Joe to let loose. What? She said. She took another half step in retreat. She shoved her thumbs into her front pockets. They were almost the same height, which made him an average 5'10", and she a stylish model. When they were married, after Joe came in from the hideout cabin, they had the same long hair. Hers blondish brown, his brownish red. They looked like two ponies at the Dorothy Day card table altar. Jane and Joe looked and acted like siblings, some said, a married couple that started out looking alike, with their elfish noses and dimpled chins and bright, curious eyes. Though Joe's eyes had since died. You're kidding, she said. Well, no, not really. He turned around and faced the window. God, why not? He balled his hands, ground his teeth. Jane seemed to be counting her breaths. She pushed up her eyebrows and responded once again to the subliminal freeze frame of her father coaxing her to jump into his arms from this second-story bedroom window the Christmas night their house burned. In one tiger bound, she covered the 8 feet between them and once again wrapped her arms around him. He struggled. She pulled tighter. She rested her chin on his left shoulder and spoke into his ear. Run for Congress, she whispered. She squeezed him tighter. She pressed her chin into his shoulder. Tears slid down off his face, off his chin, onto her hair. She rubbed her face into his shoulder. Run for Congress and win. Kick their butt.
They stood together behind the curtain, watching stragglers leave the school. Upstairs, something bounced. The refrigerator hummed and the air conditioner kicked in. They beat you down once. And he bowed his head and his shoulders bounced his chin, bounced her chin. You're rested. Now make them come do it again and again and again. She let his hands cover hers. This is my effing country, and I will do as I like. Joe recognized the paraphrase Stephen Biko, but that was going a bit far. He was not Biko. Sometimes Jane tried to be too supportive, nudging him into the clearing where he was not at all comfortable. In fact, even taking out the garbage at daylight was outside his comfort zone, so Joe's comfort zone had become lying on the sofa with a dirty blue afghan over his head. But he wanted her to be proud. He wanted the kids to not be embarrassed of him, and he wanted to forget how he drove away the night Charlie Calhoun was crucified in front of the cathedral instead of him. We have every right to live, to be here, to be ourselves, and screw whoever doesn't get it, because, you know, they don't really matter. Joe lifted his head, his chin to feel her head. He tasted his tears. I love you, she said. Well, now he had done it. His cheeks had dried, and a crystal pair of sweat began its journey around his hairline. Joe stared at the red brick school that needed repair and did not notice the ice on his own roof beginning to melt, dripping past the window.
Jane and Joe huddled around their kitchen table that night making plans. Over a bottle of Chi-Chi's margarita mix, Marlboros, taco chips, dip, and two new yellow legal pads. The kids swarmed around the dining room table doing their homework and crawling under the table from chair leg to chair leg in one complete circle without touching the floor, or else they'd burn up in an instant because the carpet is the sun. You know, well, so. By 7:30 and 4/5 of the bottle, Jane was the campaign manager and campaign committee. They knew no one else would do it. Jane drew perfect tease while Joe made a stick people neighborhood scene with a big sun and one big red daisy in the front yard. It's not easy, he said. You want to do this or not, she said. Here, look at this, spinning her pad toward him. Death penalty, immigration, farms, military budget, global warming, depleted uranium, prisons. Joe scanned her list. I could give a shit about farms, he said. You have to care about farms, said Jane. Over 90% of the land in your district is used for agriculture. Farming is the biggest industry by far, and you have to care about it. My district? Well, I don't. hunting. I hate hunting. I'd like to see deer hunters get county jail time. Put that down. He pointed at Jane's pad, then wrote it on his own. Well, how about the rest of this, she asked, and yawned. Pigs. Confinement, said Joe. Slaughter barns, houses, buildings, where they kill cows and swine for food. He smoothed a few light hairs on his upper lip. Maybe there's a way we can get that stopped or slowed down. He looked up at Jane. No, she said. She shook her head and rested her pen on the table. You don't have any idea, do you? Probably not, he said. He laughed. He looked at her to try to coax her to laugh. Huh. Shut down the slaughterhouses. Let the cows go free. Elect me. Joe stood up and began waltzing circles in the kitchen with an imaginary partner. He pulled Jane up by the elbow and began to twirl her. They twirled and fell to the floor, dizzy and laughing. Then looked up and saw the children crowded in the doorway, astonished, as characters in Oliver Twist who had just seen a policeman giggle. Oh, hi, guys, said Jane. She slumped against the stove, sweating, trying to catch her breath. Mommy and Daddy are just having fun. Joe lay on his back, his chest heaving. He traced a water stain from the cupboard under the upstairs tub. Those normal church members, I want to ask them why they let people die, live in squalor. He put one finger up, looked over, and noticed the children had returned to their table to do their homework in silence. I want to ask somebody about liberation theology. Do we just let poverty and riches happen? Do we sit by and watch whatever happens that will? I want to get out there with a shotgun and take from the rich. He began to play with the hair on his chin, puffing it with the back of his hand. He noticed his voice was deeper when he felt confident. I want to sit at this four-way and drag those rich folks out of the shiny cars, leave them laying in the slop in their church clothes. He turned his head and saw that Jane had gone to the back porch to start a load of whites. A thought of Charlie Calhoun flashed across the screen of Joe's mind movie. That's the kind of campaign I want to have, told a stained tile and ceiling fan on low speed. The back door opened and closed, letting in a shock of cold. We need brochures, said Jane. She stood over her pad and wrote while holding a full green plastic basket under her other arm. Then she turned and stood above Joe on the floor. Joe thought her upside-down mouth and chin reminded him of a whale. I think that's what you should get first, is a brochure. She romped through the living room and ruffled the hair of the nearest kit.
And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the summer help bounty hunters are about average.
Once again, we'd like to thank Rock Creek Free Press for sponsoring our show. It's a great newspaper and an independent newspaper, and you should check them out. I'd like to thank World News Trust, that's worldnewstrust.com, for hosting our website for us. We'd like to thank Len Osanek of Black Op Radio for producing our show, and we hope you'll stay tuned for Len's show immediately following. And we hope you'll come back and listen again next week, same time, same place. And that's all. Good night, Mike.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C., until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption,
state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 truth group, send your request to editor at rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.